thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I am Wally, and I'm your host. Will T and Ray Jeezy are out, so I'm here solo dolo, but I got friends coming on the show. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. It's been a good week so far. I had a good weekend. Just came from the gym. The weekend was all about power. Power's back. You know, if you ain't catch it, you need to catch it ASAP because the Sunday show was freaking amazing. I wanted to wait to midnight to watch it, but that, you know, I ain't want to fall asleep. I wanted to capture all the glory of power. So make sure you check out Power. And also over the weekend, we had a good fantasy football draft on Sunday. I had a good draft. I liked my draft. We'll probably talk fantasy football next week. Shout outs to the folks in the Urban Sports Scene Fantasy Football League. But I hope everybody knows in that league that folks are about to get that smoke. Like, they're about to get that work. My squad is deep. I don't think we have superstars on my squad, but we are deep. We are ready to do some serious damage. All right, Will T's not here, but he would normally say this. Let's get into our tradition, the pregame. Here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about last week's Skins preseason game against Ray's Atlanta Falcons. The Skins winning 19-7. Adam from the Burgundy and Gold Report will join the show. At 8:20, we'll preview the Skins' last preseason game against the Baltimore Ravens. At 8:30, former sports reporter for the Collegiate Times at Virginia Tech and current DC sports blogger Stephen Newman will join the show to talk about what the Washington Nationals should do when Ryan Zimmerman and Sean Doolittle come off the IL. At 8:40, Truth About It's Washington Wizards insider Troy Halliburton, the homie, will join me to talk about whether the Washington Wizards fan base has turned their backs on John Wall. At 8:50, I'll talk about Andrew Luck retiring, and we're going a little overtime. So finally at 9 o'clock, I'll talk about the Lakers signing Dwight Howard. But first, right now, I have my homie, the homie, Adam from the Burgundy and Gold Report on the line. What's going on, Adam?
Hey, TTR, man. Thanks for having me on again.
No problem, man. No problem. I love having you on. You're so insightful. So, Adam, you know, the dress rehearsal game was last week. The Skins defeat the Falcons 19-7. Case Keenum was 9-for-14 for 101 yards in the game. What were your thoughts on his play?
Like I said, again, it's preseason, so again, we all have to take that with a grain of salt. But I like some of the positions they put him in and some of the packages they put him in. And, you know, I'm actually in the process of writing an article coming out this week about getting the best out of Case. And just what I've seen, you know, to have success with him, you know, everyone knows he's not going to throw the ball downfield, you know. Getting him involved with, you know, short, intermediate passes, play action, screen. You know, we didn't see too much of that in preseason, which tells me I think we're going to see a heavy dose of it during the regular season. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, just like last year in the beginning of the year, you know, the heavy dose of the run game, play action, short game, I think that that's the best way to utilize him. You know, again, I take it with a grain of salt because, again, they keep it really vanilla in the preseason. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm like most people. You know, he's a bridge quarterback. And, you know, it's good. I truly believe if Trent Williams was here, I don't think this would have gone this way. I think that's 50% of the reason Dwayne Haskins is not starting is because of, you know, without Trent Williams. But, again, that's just my opinion.
So were you happy that Keenum was officially named a starting quarterback? No, that wasn't a big surprise. But what were your thoughts about that?
I thought that Jay Gruden should have just waited. You know, he's mm-hmm. been, you know, very cloak and dagger with things like very Bill Belichick-like lately. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, there was no reason to say it. He should have just waited till right before the season. You know, if he wants to keep it in-house, you know, let his guys know what it is. But I don't think, you know, now the Eagles know, okay, they're going to prepare for Case Keenum. I think he should have just waited. I don't think it was necessary. And as far as my thoughts on it, I don't know. I think it's, you know, it's probably the best way to go right now because, you know, going against Philadelphia, I think that they're just going to draw a blitz all day on Dwayne Haskins. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think with Case Keenum, they'll show a little more respect because he's a veteran. So there'll be a little more, you know, off coverage. And, you know, I think that we definitely can have some success. I'm not on board with, you know, the folks that think that Philadelphia is the next Super Bowl champion, is going to dominate. I think it's going to be a really good game. And, you know, and to start, I think, you know, he could give us a decent chance to win if they follow the blueprint of, you know, a heavy dose of the run game. But as far as, you know, do I like it or not? No. I can find holes in starting either one, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I feel you on that one. So, to on the side of like Jay Gruden, wouldn't you think that Jay Gruden has this type of arrogance to say, you know what, I had Kirk Cousins in my offense. I gave him, you know, he put up numbers. Colt McCoy is a guy that no one thought could be a starting quarterback, and I, you know, once he got the opportunity, he put up numbers with me. Now I have Case Keenum, a guy who was successful in Minnesota for that 1 year with Thielen and Diggs, that he can put up numbers in his offense?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think, you know, everyone's down on, you know, the youth of our receivers because we're going to have so many rookies on the team. But, you know, between, you know, it's a big if Trey Quinn can stay healthy, but, and same with Jordan Reed, you know, in the beginning, you know, the way they play is, you know, inside out. So the tight ends and the slot receivers are going to be utilized, you know, most often. And I think that, you know, again, if they follow the blueprint with it, you know, they can have success. As far as Keenan putting up big numbers, you know, I think if he's, you know, putting up 200 yards, you know, two touchdowns, I think that's successful, you know, when it comes to him. And I think what a lot of people are going to be surprised to see is I think you're going to see some scrambling out of him.
Yeah.
You know, I really think, you know, I'm going to go on the limb and say he's going to average his starts at least 20 yards rushing per game.
Oh, wow.
I think we're going to see a lot of that. And that mostly has to do with the offensive line play. You know, a lot of people are focused on the left side. To be honest with you, Brandon Schiff, he's looking a little rusty. I know it's preseason off, but, you know, I watched the tape on him. He was getting beat a lot. So, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of times when Case is going to probably be running through for his life on passing down.
Oh, that's scary. So Brandon Scherr was looks a little rusty to you. He's not looking like the old Brandon Scherr. What does he look?
A little bit.
Does he look scared? Does he look like he's tentative with the injury, or is it more just flat out rust?
I just think it's just knocking the rust off. You know what I mean? Because it's like, of course, he practiced and everything, but, you know, being removed from that shoulder injury, I think it'll take some time. You know, I think he's going to. The first 2 weeks, you know, he might look a little up and down, but I think as soon as he gets into the field, you know, we'll get the old Brandon back. But I'm really looking forward to seeing Wes Martin. Unfortunately, I don't think they're going to start with him at left guard.
No.
I think they're going to go with Flowers.
They are. They're going to Eric.
You know, and I think he's going to get the quick hook. I think they'll give him the first game, but I think if he starts making costly penalties, and especially if he starts getting our quarterback hit, I think you'll see the quick hook. So I have Wes Martin coming in, you know, sometime during the second game. So I think the whole Flowers situation is going to be short-lived.
Well, we can only hope that our offensive line coach, the guru, can just do magical wonders with him. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. I have Adam from the Burgundy and Gold Report on the line. All right, so the return of Geis. Geis was in full effect. Geis had 11 carries for 44 yards. Your thoughts on his performance, and did this outing change your mind about his ranking on the depth chart, maybe him starting over Adrian Peterson?
No, I think it's going to be a committee kind of a run game. You know, I think it'll start out with, you know, AP. At least the first couple weeks, you're going to see AP coming out first, you know, and again, it's just veteran. It's just, you know, respect to the veteran. But I think as soon as we get to, you know, the midseason point, I think Geis will start to take a hold of that role, you know, knock on wood if he can stay healthy. But I like what I saw from him. It did nothing change my mind. He is what he is. I think what he offers that the tape doesn't show is his receiving ability. And I think once he starts to establish that, that's when he's going to overtake Peterson. And, you know, Peterson, you know, he had a nice game. He had a nice season last year. But I think it's going to be not too long before we see Geis really take a hold of the starting position. You know, it'll be by committee in the beginning. And what I'm hoping is, you know, they at least mix it up a little bit, get Thompson. And I'd like to see Thompson get in with both of them. You know, I'd like to see formations where, you know, if AP's in, Thompson is in, and vice versa. Because out of all of them, that's what's the craziest thing. He's actually the best pass blocker out of all of them.
Yeah, you're talking about Thompson, right?
Thompson, yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
You know, having him on the team, and, you know, I don't know if you read that article about one thing I'm going to really give Callahan, you know, credit for is he's actually you know, in tandem with the company that makes the sleds, the tackling sleds, and they came out with a new design where it's almost like arms that come off that sled, so it's going to be more like lower to the ground, and what it's doing is it's actually helping our linemen, adjust to, what real pass rushes look like, because it used to be, the big boys just pushing through. Now, you have the Aaron Donalds and all these tackles that are, under 6'2", that are really getting under your pads and getting low. So I think that, and I saw Thompson in those drills with those tackling dummies, in the sled. And I really think that Thompson, that's going to get him on the field more often. We're talking about Adrian Peterson and Geist, but I really think, this is the year that, Jay's got to, be a little more creative and a little less scared with Thompson and, get him in on not just obvious passing downs and get him in on run down because he's dangerous.
Yeah.
And, this, in my opinion, this is his last year with us, regardless of what kind of season he has.
Wow.
I think, this is going to be, Gruden even mentioned about Love. This is going to be a redshirt year. I said that the second we got him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think, Love will take that spot next year. It'll be Love and Geist. And, if we can get Thompson somewhere reasonable, he'll be back. But for the most part, Love and Geist are the future.
Yeah, I think we see that. And I would go as far to say Geist better be he better be concerned because Bryce Love, if healthy, is just as dynamic as Geist.
Oh, no doubt. About that.
He has to. And that's an interesting dynamic that is going to play out down the road. But you mentioned Adrian Peterson. You know what? I mean, I like what I saw with Geist, but something about what I saw about Adrian Peterson in that first game against the Bengals, his first line of work against the Bengals, like he still has it, though. He still has it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to be a challenge. I mean, I'm not rushing. I wouldn't rush Geist. He looked good. Don't get me wrong. And I do want Geist to be sprinkled in. But I don't think the old man's going to give it up too easy.
Oh, no, not especially with the incentives in this contract.
Yeah.
I think I read that it's nearly $5 million if he reaches the 1,000-yard mark. I think he gets – it's like another million and change if he gets 10 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about over $5.5 million incentives, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's going to be driving him big time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't – that's what I'm saying. The first couple games, I think it's going to be a healthy dose of AP.
Mm-hmm.
And just the way he runs and the way he creates, I think it's going to be very hard to take him off the field. They'll get guys in when they want, but knowing how Gruden works, he goes with the hot hand.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Mm-hmm. In the first 2 weeks, I think we're going to see Adrian Peterson get at least 15 to 20 carries a game.
Yeah, and if he gets that opportunity, if he gets 15 to 20 carries, I think he'll produce. He had a whole camp with this team now. He could produce. But again, it's going to work out for this team, like you mentioned, if this team just leans on the running game. They have quality backs, two guys who are if they got the rock full time, these are guys who can get 1,000 yards easy. So you got two individuals in Geist and Peterson that can do damage. You mentioned Chris Thompson. If you could sprinkle all three of them in, you have a situation where you don't have to feature the passing game as much.
Agreed.
The Skins held the Falcons, that high power Atlanta Falcons offense, even though they were out Julio Jones, one of the best wide receivers in the game. I think the best wide receiver in the game. To 7 points, what were your overall thoughts on the Skins defense and who stood out for you?
Oh, I did a film breakdown and, granted it was against the backups, but man, Casanova McKenzie, and I think I said this to you a long time ago.
Sure,
is there you or somebody else? This kid's dynamic. I've been watching him since Auburn, and with that 58 on his back, it's really reminiscent of the little time we had with Junior Gallette.
Mm-hmm.
That bend, that speed, the burst that he has around the edge. I think that this is a guy that he's going to actually help Ryan Kerrigan this year, believe it or not, because Ryan Kerrigan, I think, was somewhere over 70% of the snaps last year, and I think Kerrigan can be just as productive, if not more productive, with McKenzie being in more and, lowering maybe his contributions to 55-60% time and McKenzie, getting him, 15-20 snaps in the game, especially on obvious passing downs. I think we're going to see some exotic packages here. I'm confident in that. Cause
I hope.
I guess it's this cautious, optimistic Redskins, disease that we have here. I think, from what I'm hearing, and I tend to believe it, in the off season, how They bought Todd Bowles, a lot of people. Yeah. Listen, they were trying to hire them, okay?
Yeah.
Then they turned it around like, oh, well, Minuski is just, you know, talking to people and getting ideas. But I think truly what they're going to bring to the forefront is a collective idea between Tom Sula, Ryan Horton and the defensive back coach, and Minuski. And I think we're going to see more. I think Horton, just from, you know, past film I've seen from the team, he's not big on off cover, you know, given the cushions that we're
seeing.
So
he's not,
you know, I think we're going to see a lot more press coverage. And I think, you know, a lot of people get caught up in Moreland's size, but man, put that kid in press coverage, you know.
Oh man, he can handle it.
Oh, he's starting, you know, he's going to start it. You know, he's going to be the starting slot to begin with. You know, he might rotate with Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, but I think that they're going to be smart with Cromartie as well and, you know, maybe rotate him a little more based on his age, because that's the kind of guy you're going to want down the stretch, you know, on your team. And, you know, my guy Adonis Alexander, man, I've been a fan for a while, but I think he's out, unfortunately. Yeah, you know, he had his chance. He's a prototypical size, everything, but, you know, I think when Gray left, unfortunately, I think his chance is left. So Yeah, he's out. But yeah, I have a lot of confidence in what kind of, you know, design packages they're going to run, especially against Philadelphia. You know, with the way Carson Wentz plays, you know, they're going to be spying him all game, because if we can keep Carson Wentz in the pocket, we can beat the Eagles. You know, everyone is, you know, they just announced today that DeSean Jackson broke a finger, and although that sounds minor,
that's always, you know, big. That's all for you. You know, that's big. It's not minor. It's big. They're low playing it, but it's your finger.
Yeah.
You got to catch a football.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's where press coverage comes into play. You have somebody that has any kind of hand, wrist, finger issues. They always tell you, you know, I played a little safety, you know, when I was in school, and, you know, the one thing that they tell you is if you see anyone waving, that, like shaking their hands after a catch or anything, go hard on that press coverage, slap those hands, you know, push those arms down. And I think Moreland and I think Norman and even, you know, even to a point Dunbar, honestly, you know, I know he's still getting his legs back. I'm not confident he's 100% back yet. But I think if they really dedicate themselves to, you know, not playing off coverage, you know, minimizing this zone cloud coverage and just being more aggressive, I think this defense is going to be top five. I really do. And I've said that before the season started. And I just think that we're going to see more of a healthy rotation going. And once that happens, I think some big things are going to happen with this defense.
Yeah, I hope so. I said this before, and I said this to you, the defense has the talent to be a top five, top three defense, but it's all going to be predicated on Minuski. I don't want to hear about talent. I think they have the talent. It will all be predicated on Minuski. Well, Thursday against the Ravens, that's the Skins' last preseason game. Who needs this game in the worst way? We'll discuss this after the break. You listen to the Urban Sports saying for ages. You dig? Deuces. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wally, and I'm your host. Will T, Ray Geezer are out, but I'm not alone. I got my man Adam from the Burgundy and Gold Report. Adam, you still here with me, right? I didn't lose you. All right, it's good.
I'm here.
cool. So Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Skins take on the Baltimore Ravens up at FedEx Field. I will be in the building myself. There was a report. I'm going to talk about Josh Dotson. He's a guy, you know, I like, and we talk about him on Twitter. But there was a report there was a report, excuse me, in the Athletic DC that the Skins are trying to trade Josh Dotson, which isn't really a surprise. We heard this about a couple weeks ago. And that they may cut Josh Dotson. Do you think Dotson plays in the final preseason game?
No. They're gonna hold him out. And the reason I think they've been holding him out is because they didn't want him to get hurt. I think that I'm not taking it from the reports. I'm just taking it from what I've seen and just what his comps, the different players on the team, between Cam Sims and Kelvin Harmon. Mm-hmm. These are guys that are similar kind of skill sets as far as 50-50, ball catchers. And I think when Sims showed against Atlanta, that's it. He's locked. Not that it was a question before. Mm-hmm. And I think Kelvin Harmon has really started to shine and really started to show that, he's the kind of big body receiver that we were hoping Josh Dotson to be. So I think that they can hope all they want that they're going to trade him. But nobody's going to give a pick because at this point in the preseason, teams are willing to wait for teams to just start to release players. Yeah. And in the end, I think they'll hold them out. And, surprisingly enough, maybe to some, I think, although Steven Sims from Kansas, he's more of a slot guy. But I think, him and Robert Davis are going to, knock Josh Dotson off the roster. Because I have, in the end, mm-hmm. I was, between 6 and 7. But I think that they're going to go with 7 receivers in the end.
Yeah, I think they're going with 7. I actually think they're going to keep Dotson. I think Sims will probably can make the practice squad. I don't think you can – not Cam Sims. I'm talking about Steven Sims. I don't think he's Steven a guy Sims. that you have to worry about on the practice squad at the moment. Unless certain things happen. But I don't think he showed enough in preseason to say, okay, well, a team outside of the organization would like to come in and scoop him unless their scouting department does a great – unless these other team, their scouting department does an excellent job. When I look at Josh, this situation – I differ in this aspect that – I just think that, one, if you're going to trade, Josh Dotson, and I'm with you, there's no real value, right? You get a 6th or 7th round pick, you can ask for that, but who cares about a 6th or 7th round pick? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, then you can go that route forward, or you can try to go that route, but you would be best, and you're right, it could be injury, but if you don't care about the guy, if you really believe that, say, you have all faith in your young guys, right? All the receivers that you have in camp. Who cares about his injuries? That's my thing. Who cares about his injuries? Like, put him out there. See what you can do if you can showcase him enough, do certain things, run bubble screens or whatever, put him in situations to try to be successful in preseason. At least you can find a sucker. That's my whole thing. It's all about finding a sucker. You know what I mean? So if you're not, if you don't do that, that shows me that you're not really trying hard to trade him. You can say, the reports can say that you're trying to trade him, but unless you're a back-ass organization that doesn't know how to try to find a gullible team to take this man because you don't want him, then to me, on the other end, I have to think that maybe you really don't thoroughly want to trade him.
Alan thinks he's smarter than that, and that's the thing, and that's why I see him. I do take credence with these reports because I think that Alan thinks he's smarter than everybody, mm-hmm. and I think that he thinks he's the opposite of what we're saying. Mm-hmm. By holding him out, saying, hey, see, we have a healthy Josh Dotson here, see, no tread, instead of what you're saying, is showcase him, show mm-hmm. that he's worth a 6'7". The message I'm getting is he's out. Because he's not on the field. Not that they're trying to preserve him. That they're saying, hey, look, see, he's removed from injuries. He has no thing. See, we've had him out of camp. He's good. Come get him. We'll give it to you for a 6th, 7th rounder. Mm-hmm. So I think in the end, they're going to ride that until as long as they can. And I think he'll be one of the final cuts off the team because they're going to wait till the absolute end to see if they can get any kind of compensation for him. And then at that point, they'll release him. And honestly, this is not that I think he's horrible, okay? Mm-hmm. I just don't think he fits what the Redskins and Jay Gruden are trying to do. Mm-hmm. I think you could put him on a Pittsburgh Steelers team. I think there's a lot of teams you could put him on, and I think he could do well. Yeah. Look how Bryant did with Pittsburgh before he had, all of his, weed issues and before, he was kicking at the door. I think I could see him on the Raiders. I could see him on Pittsburgh. He could still have success as, a 3rd, 4th receiver. I don't see him as a 1st, 2nd. But I don't think he's going to be out of the league. Like, I heard a lot of people on Twitter, they get a little far. When you hear me say that, it's about, when I scout and I review, it's about the Redskins. It's not, unless I say he won't play anywhere else, I'm saying he just doesn't fit what we do. Even when I do my top 25 for the draft, top 25 for the Redskins.
Yeah.
So I think in that way, Allen just thinks he's smart and he's going to hold out. He's going to try to get something from me, you know, be one of the final cuts. But yeah, in the end, I don't see him working in what Jay Gruden's trying to do, especially starting with Keenum. Keenum is not going to throw a 50-yard bomb to him down the field. It's just, that's not going to happen.
Well, he'll throw it up. We know Case throws it up.
Yeah.
He'll give him the so-called 50-50 ball. It will be 50-50. One way or the other, it will be 50-50.
No doubt.
All right, let's move off from Josh Dotson. So this game is a big game for a lot of players that are on the bubble. Who needs a big game in the worst way?
I think, you know, it's right now I'm looking especially at the running backs and receivers, like I previously mentioned. Believe it or not, a lot of people think Robert Davis is locked. He's not a lock. Honestly, I think he'll clear. I have him as making the team as a seventh receiver, but I think he would make the practice squad because with what type of knee injury he had, I guarantee you 90% of the teams in the NFL aren't going to jump on him. Maybe in a couple weeks, but right after the preseason to make him their fifth, sixth receiver, which that's about average with most teams keep, I don't see it. So I think, you know, he's probably going to get a start in that game. Stevenson, but I think the real matchup to watch is going to be Perine Marshall, and I really like Craig Reynolds. Craig Reynolds is a guy that I see on the practice squad, and you know he's somebody that you know down the line. But between Byron Marshall and Samaje Perine, but Perine's got to have a good game because you know Gruden has really talked him up, and I think the management is watching that. If they see, even though it's a meaningless, you know, fourth preseason game, he's probably got to have the best game out of anybody on the team against Baltimore.
Yeah, I think Perine is going to make the team. I think Marshall had his opportunity. He just didn't show out enough to me. He played better against Atlanta. I won't lie. When I look at Marshall, I don't see anything special in terms of being that back out the backfield who can catch. I don't look at him that way. Like, I think Geist can do what he does, to be honest with you. Look at him as anything special. Perine, if AP, if Geist goes, if one of those dudes go down, you do have a backup in terms of a guy who can run in between the tackle. So I don't know. When I look at Perine, when I look at Marshall, I don't see special. Truth be told, a guy that I thought was better than Perine was Capri Bibbs. So I don't even look at Marshall. It's Capri Bibbs. So I don't know. I'm not the biggest Marshall fan. I'm just not. I tried.
Agreed. Me neither.
I tried though. Believe me, I tried. Because there's a lot of people that gas him up. So I tried, and I was like, you know what, he ain't that bad. But then when I look at him, it's not like he's elusive. It's not like punt returns. He's a guy like, oh, who can take it to the house. When I look at him, it's like he's a football player, but nothing special.
Yeah. Agree. Mm-hmm. Agree. I think you know his special team, the aspect of him on special teams and returner gives him the leg up over Perine. Mm-hmm. But in the end, I agree. I think that Perine's probably going to make it because honestly, on game days, they don't activate four running backs.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to, you know, we're talking about Marshall and special teams. They're not going to activate four running backs on game day. So, you know, Chris Thompson, you got to have that guy. I want to see him back there. I want to see him taking punts. I want to see, you know, he's mostly been kick returns for the most part since he's been here. But I want to see him doing both, honestly. You know, I want to see us utilizing him as much as possible and stop being scared with him because, you know, even when Jay is tentative with him, he'll still get hurt. So I think this is the year you just got to go full force with Thompson. And like I said, whoever's the fourth running back, they're going to be inactive on game day anyway. So it's something to watch. It's kind of irrelevant, but it's going to definitely be a battle to watch because I think for the most part, the receivers are the most interesting to watch. And I think that that's going to reveal itself, you know, pretty quick. Like I said, between Steve Sims, Robert Davis, and Josh Dotson, I think those are the three that are going to be really competing for like a 6th and 7th spot.
Mm. So, Adam, before I let you go, where can our listeners check out your blogs and how can they catch you on social media?
Okay. So, yeah. So, I've actually started a new segment of the Burgundy and Gold Report Film Room.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. And you can find that on Burgundy and Gold Report. WordPress.com. That's actually on my homepage. So before you even get to my articles, I'll have usually every couple of days I'll have a film review. Like I said, the last one I had was Casanova McKenzie. Mm-hmm. But you know, even better, you can find me on Twitter at the B&G Report. And like I said, I have a lot of my film reviews there and all my articles, everything linked there. You can find me.
Hey, Adam, you know I appreciate you. Thank you for being on, my man.
always, man. Thanks for having me. ACTR, man.
ACTR, man. Stay, have a blessed one, all right?
You too, bro.
All right. That's my man, Adam, from the Burgundy and Gold Report. Make sure you check that out. Check him out. Check him out on Twitter. All right. Zimmerman and Doolittle should be back soon. Should they get their spots back? DC sports blogger Stephen Newman will join me after the break to discuss this. You're listening to Urban Sports Saying for Aegis. You dig? Deuces.
I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though, ambition, flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, is born like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, with Yoshi, a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your head. This that puts the kids to bed. This that I got realness. I just kill shit, cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dark, I got evil that rot inside my DNA. I got off, I got trouble, some heart inside my DNA. I just win again, then win again, like Wimbledon I serve. Yeah, that's him again, the sound that engine in is like a bird. You see fire.
Who doesn't like Kendrick Lamar? You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. And well, I'm Wally, and I'm your host. Will T, Ray Jeezy aren't in the building. But it's cool, though. Like, I got a mob. I got a mob of people on the show. Yes, having Wally's back. I know, right? Right now, I have former sports reporter for Collegiate Times at Virginia Tech and DC sports blogger Stephen Newman on the line. What's up, Stephen? And first off, welcome to the Urban Sports Scene.
Hey, great to be on. How are you doing, Wally?
I am fine. It's a pleasure to have you on, Steve. We always talk Nats on Twitter, so it's good to finally have you on the show.
Yeah, for sure. Glad to be here. Glad to get my thoughts.
All right, so here we go. Sean Doolittle was struggling, went on the IL. Ryan Zimmerman had plantar fasciitis, and they should be coming off the IL pretty soon. Zimmerman is doing rehab starts in single-A ball. Should he resume being the Nats' starting first baseman?
So Zimmerman's an interesting one because every year it seems like he something pops up. He'll go on the IL. He'll come back. A lot of the time, too, when he comes back, he'll get hot. He'll go on a tear.
All the time.
the thing to me this year, it's two things. So one, his contract, not that I love using the financial argument, but his contract is about to come up. So he's got next year, it's either the $2 million to buy him out or they'll have to pay him $18 million. To me, part of it is that I don't think they can pick up that option. So if you then cut the ties long term, it's easier to me to not play him now. And I don't feel like the other thing is even if Ryan Zimmerman goes on one of those tears, is he a better hitter than, say, Howie Kendrick? Because they'd be getting the same sorts of reps, whether it's every day or against lefties as right-handed hitters. I don't think you could even at that point definitively say he's a better option, and Howie Kendrick's locked in right now. So I don't see how you do it.
What? So you would, even though he's like one of the leaders, he's Ryan Zimmerman. He's like Mr. Nat.
Yeah, it's hard. It really is. But I feel like you got everybody so locked in right now that even if he's going to hit like he hits a lot of the time, I mean, obviously you can use him as a pinch hitter because you have to imagine he'd be a clutch hitter, all of that. But because this is, what, the second or third time that plantar fasciitis has come up with him, you can't keep risking that. So if you can keep him off his feet, I feel like he'd be more value anyway.
It's a surprise. It's amazing. Like, the Nats right now are down against the Orioles 2-0, 2-0, bottom of the fifth. It's still relatively early. I'm an Orioles fan. But I'm so surprised, and it's depressing. I know. Don't worry about it. But it's amazing that, you know, they can even be down to the Orioles, knowing that this team has been scoring like 7+ runs like every other day. So let's go to Doolittle. Doolittle stated that he needs to earn his closer spot. Do you think he should jump right into the fire once he returns from the IL?
Quite frankly, I agree with Sean Doolittle. I think he's got to earn it back. As great as he's been for most of the time he's been with the Nats, the last month or so, ever since the the whole knee thing popped up, or whatever they want to call it. They say it's like his knee. There's a lot of things.
Yeah, we know it's BS. We know that's BS. We know that was BS. He's just
yeah.
Tired.
Absolutely. I completely agree. But I do think the time off should help.
Yeah.
But at the same time, until he can prove that he's anything close to what he'd been, not even necessarily an all-star closer,
mm-hmm.
but just to be what he'd been in the first half of this year, where he was just a dependable guy, I don't see the reason to, because until Daniel Hudson, who I guess has the closer job right now,
yeah.
until he proves that he just can't handle it, and the Doolittle's back, because they have a lot of guys right now too. I feel like that's part of what I really liked about what they did, the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
They traded for three guys that I wouldn't really even have a problem with closing games
yeah.
if you had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I Doolittle definitely has value. You could probably use him in different roles too, but until he proves that he's what he's been, I'm not going to assume he'll be what he's been.
Yeah, I agree. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Right now, I have former sports reporter for Collegiate Times at Virginia Tech and DC sports blogger Stephen Newman on the line. So back to so Hudson is the close. How long would you take? See, I was thinking that they should even wait another week for Doolittle. Like, I was like, all right, give him a week. Then give him another week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that too long? Could they afford to do that?
I see the argument, because the thing with that too is just in terms of the roster, it would make more sense. Like you get September call ups at
mm-hmm.
that point. You don't
yeah.
have to make any moves like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. They definitely could, because mm-hmm. plus their schedule right now. I mean, you know, they're playing your Orioles, and then they got the Marlins.
The Marlins, I know. Neither
one of them. Are. Much of anything.
I know, you're so
I
right,
mean,
though.
But, I don't know. I feel like, I'm personally, I'm willing to, if he thinks he's ready to go, I'll let him go. I won't necessarily throw him in a closer,
mm-hmm.
but I'm willing to, because, I mean, at the end of the day, let's face it, like, a guy like Sean Doolittle,
mm-hmm.
I'd take any day of the week over, even if he's what he was, almost like right before I went to IL.
Yeah.
I would take that, I feel like, over like Matt Grace.
Yes, easily. Yeah,
but
I got you.
I don't,
yeah.
So I don't see a reason to wait in that sense. If he thinks he's ready, then I'll let him.
Yeah, I'm with you. So, Stephen, before I let you go, how can our listeners catch your content and also hit you up on social media?
Yeah, so you can definitely always find me on Twitter
mm-hmm.
at Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. _ Newman, NEWMAN
mm-hmm.
1. And I do, since we're talking about the bullpen,
yeah.
I do every day throughout the game and after the game, I have a reliever tracker track of. Like, every game I'll post whether if guys pitched that day, like I'll put their pitch count, whether they throwing them back-to-back or the last time they got the pitch. I keep track of that, because part of the problem I see with the bullpen too, since we're on that, is that guys are overworked. That's
yes.
the problem with you.
So,
too.
Yeah.
So that, and I saw that early in the year, inspired me, hey, I should keep track of that, just see how Davey's handling that.
Mm.
So yeah, that you can always find that for me on Twitter. And I also am a, didn't mention it, but I am a contributor on a friend's Virginia Tech sports blog,
yeah.
as a DC sports blogger, which is, and that's Ricky LaBlue, RickyLablue.com. So you can find me. I'll have content there for
mm-hmm.
like nationals or other DC sports.
Well, do me a favor. Anytime you write anything on that blog, send it to me so I can retweet it or so I can share it.
Sure.
Okay. Anytime.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Be happy to.
All right. Anytime.
I'm down for it.
All right. Anytime. Okay. Don't feel scared. Just send it to me. All right, Stephen. Thanks.
That's
thanks
great.
Thanks for being on, Steve. You know, I appreciate you. And we'll talk about the Nets
on
Twitter.
Me.
Anytime, man. Anytime.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yep.
That is my man, Stephen Newman. Again, former sports reporter for Collegiate Times at Virginia Tech and DC sports blogger. He's doing big things, and you make sure you follow him on Twitter. Okay, it's at Stephen_Newman1. He talks about the Nats all the time. He has his great bullpen stats. So again, make sure you check him out. DC done got no love for John Wall. Like, they got no love for John Wall right now. Troy Halliburton for Truth About It will join me after the break to discuss this. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene for Aegis. You dig? Deuces.
Yeah. Turn everything up in that little. Yeah. Are we going to keep that? Yeah.
What y'all know about that new Jeezy? That new Jeezy is hot. Real talk, man. What y'all know about that new Jeezy? MLK Boulevard. I'm telling you, that's one of the hottest tracks out there in the game, man. I'm loving that. I'm loving the new Jeezy. Make sure you get Motivation 104. I'm really promoting for Jeezy right now. I can't believe I'm doing that. But that album is hot. Hot fire like Dying Line. Hot fire. All right, right now I have Truth About It. Washington Wizards insider Troy Halliburton on the line. That's my homie, so I want to say the homie. What's up, Troy?
What's up, Wally? How you doing today, man?
I'm good, man. Hey, Troy, you heard the new Jeezy, man? Have you heard the new Jeezy? The new Jeezy?
Nah,
man.
I ain't gonna lie, man. I saw Jeezy had an Air Brack album cover, and I had to put that on the back burner, man.
Hey, man. You know, I've been a Jeezy fan for a minute, and his last couple albums have really depressed me. I was like, dude, you falling off. But this album here, this is retro Jeezy, man. Retro Jeezy.
Well, I'm spending right now is that Young Thug.
Young Thug.
So, you know.
But that Rick Ross, do you like that the new Rick Ross?
Oh, of course.
Okay,
man.
About to say.
I love Rick Ross, man. That Ross is he's classic, man. Yeah. He puts out an album, man. He never gives less than an A-line.
Yeah, I'm with
you.
I
actually got a chance to go see him in concert.
How was it?
In D.C. at the Trill Grill Festival a week back, so... Yeah, no, Rosé is always going to be in the rotation.
You know he's back in, he's in the area, like, I want to say in October. He's in the area in October. He's going to be in the Fillmore. I think it's the Fillmore.
Okay, yeah. Well, hey, you know what? We might have to do a podcast on location as that.
Oh, man, that would be hot, bruh. That would be hot. All right, so, Troy, I've been thinking about this for a while now. John Wall has been one of the best Wizards players to date, to be honest with you, when healthy. He is a top 5 point guard, again, if when healthy. Now people, healthy or not, want to move towards the whole Bradley Beal train and ditch John Wall. Why have fans abandoned Wall?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do, you can't talk about Wall right now without talking about his contract. Those things are synonymous at this point. So when you look at a player who's getting ready to be making close upwards of $40 million over the next couple of seasons. And, with him coming off of two straight injury-riddled seasons, it's kind of hard for Wizards fans to see the light at the end of the tunnel as far as, where this situation is going to go. But I do recognize that, Wall is probably, right now, I'd probably say the second or third best Washington Wizard or Bullet of all time.
Yeah.
And he has a very good chance of ending up, the best player in this franchise history.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's really setting himself up for a major comeback story.
Yeah, because you know what? I'm trying to, understand this. And I get, I'll say this. I'm going to be honest. Like, initially when Bradley Beal came to the scene, I was like, he's okay. But he grew on me because he got better every year. Because anytime you want a basketball player to get better every year, right? You want progression. So when I looked at Bradley Beal, I was like, all right, you know what? This is a hard worker. This young man could do big things. But at the end of the day, when you look at what John Wall did with his organization as the top dog and how he, to me, uplifted, you know, multiple players. Like, he improved, he helped make auto, and I'm an auto guy, but he, at the time, he helped improve Otto Porter. He helped improve Trevor Ariza. You know what I mean? Like, John Wall was a guy that, to me, uplifted his teammates. This is with Randy Whitman. I'm not going to talk about with Scott Brooks. That's a whole different argument. But this is with Randy Whitman. Then, you know, you see Bradley Beal when he got the team for himself, and he's gone on stretches and whatnot. But at the end of the day, the team tends to fall off a little bit. But when you have John Wall at a high level, it's different because John Wall can kind of uplift the whole team.
Right. No, I agree 100% with the fact that John Wall, you know, he used to be the player that was uplifting his teammates. Mm-hmm. You know, there used to be a kind of a, not a running joke, but a running theme of, you know, you come to D.C. and John Wall would get you paid.
Yeah.
You know, John Wall, you know, he's got multiple, you know, swingman, 4-3 and D type players, from, you know, Martell Webster to Trevor Ariza to Jared Dudley.
Uh-huh.
You know, a lot of guys have come to D.C. and had their best shooting season playing next to John Wall. And so, but I think that, you know, part of the reason that when we go back to why the fans have kind of turned on him, and a lot of it has to do with the contract, but, you know, some of that stuff has been, the tide has been turning before he even, the contract even kicked in. Mm-hmm. And I think that Wall kind of changed the way he played a little bit. Mm-hmm. Whereas when he was early on in his career, he was more of that, you know, Chris Paul facilitating type of point guard, where he was getting everybody involved. Mm-hmm. And I think that he kind of let it get into his head that he had to be a different type of player, where he started playing more like the Damian Lillard, the Kyrie Irving, you know, the more score first point guard, putting up 20 points a game type of numbers. And I think that, you know, a lot of that has to do with, you know, Kyrie Irving and Dame both have, you know, signature shoe deals, and they're you know, more popular when it comes in the NBA Twitter sphere as far as point guard is concerned. So I think that Wall, you know, he's self-conscious, he's human just like anybody else. He wants to get the same adoration that those guys get. And, you know, a part of him probably realizes, he thought that he had to play like that in order for him to get that adoration. But I think that when John Wall comes back from his Achilles injury, that you'll see a player who is probably much more similar than to the five-time All-Star that he grew to become early on in his career.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. We have Truth About It's Washington Wizards insider Troy Halliburton online. So do you think, because John Wall wasn't doing that when he was playing with, and I never really gave props to Randy Whitman because he used to annoy me anyway. But do you think that playing with Scott Brooks is the reason why John Wall's kind of gone this direction? Because under Randy Whitman, this wasn't the thing. Like you mentioned, like he made swingmen money. Like he did that under Whitman with, say, Webster and Ariza. And even Paul Pierce, bringing back Paul Pierce to play at a higher level, too.
Yeah, so I think what happened with Scott Brooks, I feel like it is a combination of things. Now, I can say that I haven't been that impressed with Scott Brooks mm-hmm. with his tenure, but I also see the other side of the coin where, you know, like the Wizards roster construction was so poor over, you know, 2016 and 2017 and 2018, like that he isn't really working with a lot. So, you know, he's trying to figure out what he can do with, you know, he's trying to cook a meal with you know, the most basic of ingredient.
Yeah.
And he's trying to work the best thing that he can do with what he has. But, I mean, I do believe that he has done, he could have done a better job with making sure that Wall and Beal were able to kind of coexist on the court at the same time. And I think that some of that goes back to the fact that, you know, it's been kind of proven that those guys, he should have been staggering their minutes a little bit more so that, you know, instead of you playing Wall and Beal together and then you take them both out at the same time, and then, you know, everybody watches Wizards games. They the starters play with Wall and Beal are healthy. They play. They get up a nice little lead, or they'll stay in contention with the team, and then the bench comes in, and then they're either down a lot or the lead is blown. So what Scott Brooks could have been doing, he could have been, you know, playing Wall from, you know, the beginning of the game until the, you know, the 6-minute mark, and then taking Wall out and letting Beal play coming in and save for the end of the first quarter, and then bringing Wall back at the beginning of the second quarter, so that, you know, that he can, you can have both of your star players staggered, and for them to be able to be on the court and kind of, you know, because, you know, two ball dominant players, they, you know, it's only one basketball. Mm-hmm. So you want to have them opportunities where they can both be on the court with, you know, different role players and kind of, you know, solidifying themselves.
He had that same problem in OKC.
Exactly.
So I'm just saying, like, all I'm saying is, when you look at that coach, and you're right, yeah, you don't want to be overly critical, right? But at the same time, you gotta look at it for what it is. You had that same issue somewhere else. You're in DC. You're in the Eastern Conference, right? Which predominantly, like, at the time, folks thought it was the weaker conference. You have one of the better backcourts of basketball, and it's the same issue you had in OKC. That's the reason why OKC couldn't be at the level that folks thought they were going to be at.
Yeah, I just want to make this clear. Any criticism of Scott Brooks' coaching job and his Wizards tenure is more than fair and, you know, quite possibly deserved. But, you know, I think that, you know, he came into this situation with expectations where they were really high, mm-hmm. but in reality, the team wasn't really properly constructed to compete at the level the expectations were. Mm-hmm. Now, this will be very interesting to see what Scott Brooks is able to do when the expectations are very low coming into this season. And I think that I wouldn't be surprised if the team far exceeds the low expectations.
Yeah, hope so. But hey, Troy, man, thanks for being on. Before I let you go, man, let my listeners know how they can catch your content and also how they can catch you on social media.
You can still always follow me on Twitter at Troy Hallenberg. I've also taken over as the host of the Locked On Wizards podcast.
Doing big things.
If you guys could go out there and subscribe to that on iTunes,
or have though, man,
or Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcast, mm-hmm. subscribe, like, download, leave a review. That's my new passion project right now. So, you know, that's what I'll be doing for the upcoming basketball season. So if I got anything to plug, it's going to be plug out that Locked On Wizards podcast.
Okay, you already know I subscribed to that already, right? I did.
Hey, I know. Right, and you know you're going to... You got to come on.
I told you, bro. Like, that's just, you know, just name, just give me the word, bro. I'm in there.
We make it happen. It's crazy because, you know, I started, you know, doing my content calendar and stuff. I'm looking up. You know, the season starts in 4 weeks. So,
I know, bro.
Media day will be in about 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're a lot closer to getting back into the mix than we even realize.
I know, man. I can't wait, too, man. I really can't wait. All right, man. Troy, you know, I appreciate you, homie.
Man, Wally, you already know, man. I'm glad to come on here and chop it up with you. I salute to you for always giving the real to the people, man.
I try, man, because you one of the real ones. I try to respect the real ones.
Hey, man, the real always going to recognize the real.
You already know, bruh. You already know.
All right, homie.
That is my man, Troy Halliburton. As you know, man, he's doing big things. Lockdown Wizards podcast. You make sure you check that up. Check that out. Big things popping. Real people do real things. All right, man. Here we go. Andrew Luck is retiring. We'll discuss that after the break. You listen to the Urban Sports saying for ages. You dig? Deuces.
This is not an easy decision. Honestly, it's the hardest decision of my life. But it is the right decision for me. For the last 4 years or so, I've been in this cycle of injury, pain, rehab. And it's been unceasing and unrelenting, both in season, and off season. And I've felt stuck in it. And the only way I see out is to no longer play football. It's taken my joy of this game away. I've been stuck in this process. I haven't been able to live the life I want to live, taking the joy out of this game. And after 2016, where I played in pain and was unable to regularly practice, I made a vow to myself that I would not go down that path again. I find myself in a similar situation, and the only way forward for me is to remove myself from football in this cycle that I've been in, come to the proverbial fork in the road. And I made a vow.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wally, and I'm your host, Will T. And Ray are out, man. Andrew Luck. That was Andrew. That was Indianapolis Colts quarterback Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck was one of my favorite quarterbacks, man. He was a four-time Pro Bowler since being drafted in 2012 ahead of RG3. Luck has delivered, man. He has delivered. He led the Colts to an 11-5 record for three straight seasons, 2012 to 2014. Luck took the Colts to the AFC Championship game in 2014. It's just a shame that injuries had to end this man's great career, man. He suffered multiple injuries with a team that took forever to protect him. He missed all 2017 with a torn labrum. In 2015, he had an abdomen muscle tear. I can't speak. And he also had a lacerated kidney, which had him peeing blood. Like, that's a soldier to me, man. A soldier peeing blood. And when I'm going to talk about those fans, though, peeing blood, think about that. And now he's dealing with a calf and ankle injury. Last season, he led the Colts back to the postseason and with a victory over the Houston Texans in the wild card game, in the wild card round, when folks thought Luck was done. Like, y'all were like Roy Jones. Y'all must have forgot. Like, y'all thought Andrew Luck was done. Took the Colts to the postseason and won a playoff game. Saturday, after the Colts lost to the Bears in a preseason game, Luck walks off the field and Colts fans are booing Luck? Like, really? That's disrespectful. Colts fans should be ashamed of themselves, man. Like, real talk, ashamed. It goes back to what Boogie Cousins said. Athletes are idolized as superstar athletes, not human beings. It's always about what they can do between the lines. That's it. That's all that ever matters. Boogie said that. After Kevin Durant went down and got hurt, Boogie stated that. And he's right. You fans don't care about the athletes. They idolize them. They don't think about them as human beings. You could be frustrated, but understand what this man, Andrew Luck, did for your organization. Like, real talk. This team never protected him with a solid offensive line till last season, and he's paying for it now. Think of, really? And you booing this man? Which caused this man to retire early. Did Luck complain about his O-line? No, he didn't. Now show Luck some damn respect. Like, show him some respect, booing him off the field. Look, so I pose this question to you all out there. What did you think of Andrew Luck? What did you think of the Colts fans booing Andrew Luck? We have a caller. You're on with the Urban Sports Scene.
Yo.
Hey, what's going on? You're on with the Urban Sports Scene. You're on.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine, how are you doing? So, what were your, so, I'm sorry, I didn't get, this is, your name is, excuse me, Kirby, right?
Yeah, Josh Kirby.
Josh Kirby, okay. So, Josh, what did you think about the Colts fans booing Luck?
I think it was very disrespectful because, number one, it was preseason, like, seriously. And number two, under the circumstances, Andrew Luck played very well with the Colts, given what he had. You know, it wasn't such a strong team. They didn't have a lot of great guys on the O-line, in my opinion, and stuff, but he made do what he could with the pieces he had, and I think he played pretty well.
Yeah, and I'm with you.
And I think it was disrespectful.
No, I'm with you. You look, this is a guy that this team didn't put an offensive line in front of him. He never complained about it. He just, you know, he just played football and played at a high level. He was the first pick overall. All the hype in the world with him. There was hype with RG3, but all the hype in the world with him. And he produced 11-5 since being for three straight seasons. I mean, I don't know what these coaches, and I get it that people said the fans didn't know what he was going through when, you know, because it came out on social media. I hear you. I hear the folks who stated that. But at the same time, understand, like, we're in an era where mental illness plays a part. You don't know what this man was going through. I've already listed the injuries that, you know, he had to deal with. Just trust the process. Trust that, you know what, he obviously had to deal with a lot for him to retire at a young age.
Yeah, I respect the fact that he retired because all the stuff that's going on with mental health, yeah, and, you know, getting hit in the head, although I don't believe he had that many injuries to the head. It's, yeah, more just injuries in general, and he's just, yeah, he lost the love for the game because he's getting hurt too much. And, you know, there's a life outside of football, and I don't really think fans understand that if they're going out there and booing Andrew Luck. And I think they need to realize that Luck has a family. Mm-hmm. He has something more than football. Football is just a job. It's just there for you until you're done. Like, you know, football can take so much out of a person, if you know what I mean. Yeah. And you know, it's just crazy to see, but, I respect what Andrew Luck's doing, deciding to step back from football. I mean, I think it was pretty young. He was pretty young. I was very surprised. A lot of people's fantasy teams were very surprised, but I respect it. And if you look at the 2012 draft class, who would have thought RG3 would outlast Andrew Luck?
I know. So surprising. So surprising. But hey, Josh, man, thanks for the call, man. You know, I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, anytime. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So also, you can, I didn't mention this, you can also tweet us at Urban Sports Scene to answer the question, and also post on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page, or even call us at 799-54070. Thanks, Josh, for the call. So on Twitter, we do have some tweets about it. On Twitter, at the Hogstyle tweeted, "I respect his decision. I also understand the fans' reaction, even though I personally wouldn't have booed him. They got the news on social media and hadn't had the benefit of seeing this presser. It was a raw, in the moment reaction. I doubt they'd boo him today." I would hope so, man. I hope so, because it's still disrespectful. You still have to understand, like, the man retired at a young age. He was obviously dealing with something. And we talk about trying to be more aware of mental illness. Just say that he was dealing with something mental. All these individuals who are bashing him, saying he's weak and that was this, that, and the other. You don't know what he's dealing with mentally. Depression is a beast, man. And dealing with and trying to come back from massive injuries can lead you into depression. So don't insult something that you don't understand. At @DH_MV, I'm going to say Mayor, MVJOR, tweeted, "I love that he was bold enough to acknowledge that to acknowledge what was happening to his body and realize that it's more to life than football. Being stuck in the cycle can put you in a dark place. Fans are stupid." Agreed. "To most of them, you're not an actual person. You're a commodity." Basically what Boogie said, you know, you're not a human being. They look at athletes like, you know, superstars and idols and not human beings. And you need to look at these individuals like human beings and care about them. Because if you cared about them, you wouldn't be worried. You wouldn't be booing him off the field. If you cared about him as a human being, you would say, what's going on? Why is he retiring? Is he dealing with something? Let him explain it before you boo him. All right. Dwight Howard is back in L.A. I'll discuss this after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig? Deuces.
Hello, hello, it's me.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wally, and I'm your host, Will T. and Ray Jeezy are out. We're going overtime with the Urban Sports Scene, if you haven't noticed. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. All right. Because DeMarcus Boogie Cousins' injury, the Lakers signed Dwight Howard to a one-year deal. It's been reported that Dwight Howard has been humbled. His one-year contract isn't guaranteed, so he's on his last leg. I like the signing. I won't lie to you. I like the signing. I think Howard showed... I think Howard should start over JaVale McGee. I like to see a defensive front line of Anthony Davis, AD, Anthony Davis, and Howard, because I believe that no layups will be allowed. Offensively speaking, the high screen and roll would be amazing with LBJ and either of the two. And this allows Davis to play the power forward and chill, because Dwight will do all the banging. We forget in limited action due to injury, Dwight Howard averaged 13 points and 9 rebounds, 9 boards per game with the Wizards. He's still a force in this game, man. Like it or not, he's still a force. And he didn't have, you know, personality issues with the Washington Wizards. We all give Dwight this bum rap, but with the Wizards, he didn't say anything that was divisive in that locker room. I still think the Lakers should still try to go after Melo. I'm still pro Melo. And to Melo, you know, Lala on power, yo, she need to get her acting game back up, Melo. She need to get her acting game up. I know y'all having issues and whatnot, but she need to act. She's been on power enough where she should be a decent actress. She's not respectable. And also them ass shots too. Sometimes, you know, I never judge chicks on like ass shots or whatnot, but she's a little over the top. Like over the top, and I don't like to say, hey, someone should cheat or whatnot, or you know, they have reason to cheat, but kind of see why Melo's eyes kind of wandered, because her ass shots a little bit over the top. Like her ass shots over the top. Like it's like she should chill on that a little bit. Also, all right, so back to Dwight Howard. Let's dead this whole bad run with the Lakers and with Kobe, like the white with Kobe's Lakers. That's what I call it, like Kobe's Lakers. Playing with Kobe isn't like playing with LeBron. All right, it is not the same thing. Kobe is a scorer and is worried about getting his. LeBron is a dude that's all about getting his teammates involved, scoring. He can score, but he's a guy that likes to get his teammates involved. We all know that he can score 30, but if you ask LeBron, it's all about, you know, finding that assist. I mean, getting that assist. So Kobe and Dwight wasn't a good mesh. Kobe wasn't all about, you know, deferring the bigs at that time. He did that with Shaq. He had his mode of deferring to a big. He did that with Shaq. He wasn't going to do that with Dwight, because Dwight wasn't Shaq. So it's a different situation. And Dwight didn't have Shaq's attitude. You think if Dwight had Shaq's attitude, Kobe would like punk Dwight like that? Nah, Shaq was more of an alpha. Dwight's more of a ha-ha guy. All right? That's why it didn't work out. With LeBron, it could work out. Because LeBron will feed Dwight's ego. Because we all know Dwight does have an ego. And if Dwight's playing well with LeBron, if LeBron has that layup and he throws that lob to Dwight, he's going to get those points, and it's going to make Dwight feel good. It can work in L.A., folks. Don't let the Kobe Bryant Lakers ruin your thought about what Dwight could be in L.A. with LeBron James. You're too concerned about, like, you're living in the past. Living the present. Dwight AD could be a powerhouse. It's not better than a Boogie and AD. I'm not saying that. A healthy Boogie and AD. Because you can pick and pop with Boogie. But defensively, Dwight and AD could be a serious problem. You don't always have to be, when we talk basketball, you don't always have to copy the other team. Or copy the teams trying to be this stretch, have a stretch five, a stretch four, and this, that, and the other. Be different. Play hard-nosed basketball. Be intimidating. You already have one of the best players in the league, and young players in Anthony Davis. You have LeBron as one of the best players ever. You have Dwight, who was a MVP in the past. Defensive MVP. An enforcer. You're not even asking him to score 20-plus. You're asking him to score 13. Maybe just 10. Give you 10 boards. 2 to 3 blocks a game. He can do that. And playing with AD makes it even easier. I don't want to hear this negative bashing on Dwight Howard. It's a good signing. The only issue is how Dwight will act in the locker room. And from all reports, I do think he's humble. And I don't think that'll be an issue. So I pose this question to you all listening. How do you expect Howard to play in his second run with the Lakers? You can tweet us at Urban Sports Scene, post on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page, or call us at 301-799-5407. On our Facebook page, we have responses. So on our Facebook page, Rodney Moss Sr., a.k.a. Coach, what's up, Coach? He posted, he is at the end of his career and he wants more pay. He wants one more big payday. If he can avoid injury and be a force in the paint, he will get paid next season. He has incentive. He's not getting a lucrative deal. If he can show out and play well and lead and help the Lakers make a nice strong push in the postseason, maybe win a championship, who knows? That's more money for Dwight. So I posted also in the Lakers Facebook group, Purple and Gold, I posted the same question about Dwight Howard. Cody Guerrero, I wish I could roll my R's, said what did he hope the second run for Dwight Howard in LA? Said bench and to rest JaVale McGee and AD. I'm going to say this. JaVale McGee has transformed his career. And I wish JaVale McGee, and I hope JaVale McGee continues to improve. But Dwight Howard is way better than JaVale McGee now. So this talk about JaVale McGee, JaVale McGee starting over Dwight Howard needs to stop. JaVale McGee is not better than Dwight Howard. Let that be real. He's not better than him now. He was never better than him then. He's not better than a healthy Dwight Howard. Stop the madness. Please stop it now. And I will ask you, what does JaVale McGee do better than Dwight Howard? Like, for real. What makes JaVale McGee better than Dwight Howard, period? And if you tell me that he's a better finisher or better player in general, then I'm going to say this. Again, you're living off that Kobe Bryant Lakers mess when Kobe called out Dwight for what it was that, you know, while he was in L.A., it's different, bruh. Stop living in the past. Cause don't use that hate to judge you to mess up your judgment about basketball players and basketball. Cause no way, again, JaVale McGee is better than Dwight Howard. My man Kenneth Lee Simpkins posted he needs to accept the role and we give him and do it well. Agreed, he does. So, man, I appreciate all your Facebook comments. Keep hitting us up on Facebook. I'm going to keep posting our content in all these multiple groups, man. Hey, this has been a great show. I appreciate you all for listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Didn't have my homies with me, but we still held it down as a unit, as a team, as a mob. Much appreciated. So it's time to sign off. But how? How can I sign off? What do I normally say? Think about it. Wait for it. Oh, I know. You've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig? Deuces. A mega. Lead us out, big homie.